And welcome to episode 45 of the Inside Elland Road podcast, brought to you by the Yorkshire Evening Post. Happy New Year to you all, and sorry for missing you last week. Once again, logistics stopping us from being here when we were there and everywhere else instead. So three games to catch up on, defeat to Hull, defeat to Forest and defeat to QPR, which is not something we've been saying much this season. We'll have a good look at transfers or what transfer news there is at the moment, and of course look ahead to Derby County on Friday night, which I think we all agree is starting to shape up as the biggest game of the season yet. Across me, from me at the table is Joe Urquhart, the YEP's Leeds United digital writer, and me, of course, I'm Phil Hay, YEP's chief football writer, here to dissect everything that's been going on since Christmas and since that, fabulous, miraculous day against Blackburn Rovers at Elland Road, which I think it's safe to say has probably used up the last of the stardust that was there for Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that we managed to get one in on Christmas week when, you know, it's Christmas, and then last week we didn't manage to meet up, but never mind. You had a few days off, didn't you?
I did, and the only thing was, even in Christmas, we basically had to go to your front room to do it, which is what we should have done last week as well. But yeah, apologies for that. One week off out of four.
Now we're 52, in the glamorous YEP boardroom, so it just uphill for this podcast.
Yeah, although we'll apologise in advance for the echo and also for the sounds of the toilets above our heads, which I'm afraid there's not very much we can do about. 2-0 defeat to Hull City ended a run of seven straight wins, and stopped Leeds putting together what would have been the longest run of victories in the league since 1931, before even I was born, certainly before you were born, Mr. 25-year-old. I think it's starting to become a bit of a blueprint for how to play against Leeds and how to beat Leeds at Elland Road. I think Birmingham did the same as Hull, Nottingham Forest did the same as Hull, very nearly came away with a victory in October, but for the Kemar Roof handball goal 8 minutes from time. Essentially, concede possession, sit deep, trust yourself not to make mistakes at the back, and trust yourself to do damage on the counter-attack, which on the day was exactly what Hull did.
Yeah, they basically executed their game plan to perfection, didn't they? They soaked up the pressure, waited for Leeds to give them the ball, and then hit sort of Grzycki and Bowen on the wings, and they were in deadly form, weren't they, as they have been for the past 2 months, really. I mean, they've won 6 or 7 on the bounce now, haven't they? And they beat Bolton, I think, 6-0 at the weekend. So, yeah, just a bit of a bad, not a bad afternoon, but maybe just not quite ticking on all fronts for Leeds. But I thought they still created chances. I thought they still played fairly well. I think they just couldn't find, and it's been the Achilles heel, as Bielsa said. They just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, and Hull just did that to perfection. Obviously, there was a couple of things in the build up to both goals that maybe you thought they shouldn't have done that. Phillips, obviously, horrendous clearance, which allowed Hull to take lead, and then Barry Douglas should have just taken a yellow card from the build-up to the second one. So, obviously, little personal decisions and sort of culminated to the 2-0 victory, but I thought Hull probably deserved the game on balance of play, really.
I don't think I would trade Hernandez for either of Grzycki or Bowen, but I think, certainly on one side of the pitch, you see in those two players what Leeds don't have, with anyone, with the exception of Jack Clark, I think, the pace to go by players, the pace to do, you know, to do a lot of damage when the space opens up. And you're right, they were the two influential players on the day. They were the two players, Bowen in particular, I thought, who made the difference. But Grzycki as well for the second goal. Like you say, I don't even think it was necessary for Douglas to take a yellow card in that attack. I think it was just necessary for him to read Grzycki's positioning better and to get his own positioning better as well, beaten too easily there. And in the end, a tap-in for Bowen. But shots off the line for Leeds. It was one of those days where nothing was going in, nothing looked like going in. It seemed as if it was going to be Hull's afternoon. And I think that's one of the reasons why Bielsa doesn't seem to be particularly panicked about that result, or, as we'll come on to, the game at Forest either, which, again, a heavy defeat, not far off the heaviest defeat of the season, 4-2 loss down at the City Ground. But mitigating factors in there, bad mistakes by individual players, which I know you can't disregard completely, but also Calvin Phillips having the sort of challenge which, I guess, a little bit like 10 pints on New Year's Eve, he's going to allow himself once a season at least, isn't he?
Yeah, well, we we were there joking with him on Thursday. Was it Thursday? I forget what day of the week it is now. Whenever it was for the press conference, and he just said, look, it was a genuine attempt for the ball, and you could kind of see that. I think he just mistimed it. It's not malicious, but I think we were reading Prutton's column last week for our honourable newspaper, and he was saying he's kind of on the edge of being that physical dominating player for Leeds, and you need that in your side, and maybe once every season or twice every season you might forgive that kind of tackle for his play overall. And I think you have to do that as long as he bounces back from it at Forest. Obviously in the long run it did cost Leeds the game, really, because they got torn apart in the second half sort of defensively. But we saw something as well in that game where Leeds just never say die attitude again came out for 10-15 minutes in that second half, and it was pulsating to watch even with 10 men, and they were getting plaudits from all sides of the ground, really, for playing that way. But ultimately the Phillips red card did cost them. So
I felt that they were better with 10 players than Forest were with 11. Yeah. And in the end it came down to, aside from the bad mistake from Forshaw which gave away the opening goal, and then Phillips challenge which got him a red card before half time, and I don't think any disagreement with that red card at all, although definitely some dispute over the yellow card for Jack Robinson earlier in the game. And again, if you're highlighting or isolating incidents which didn't go for Leeds in that period of 2 or 3 days, that was a critical one. At 1-0 down, admittedly, but Robinson's pushing the back of Jack Harrison. There didn't seem much question that Harrison was clean through and was about to shoot. There was a covering defender in Danny Fox, but I don't think Fox was going to get to Harrison before Harrison got a shot away. And that, for me, should have been a red card. But Phillips is off the ground, you know, studs up. It was a classic Phillips challenge, really. Like I say, he has that in him, and it comes out from time to time. And I don't think anybody was arguing with that decision, more with the inconsistency of what had gone on with Robinson. But I still go back to the fact that I did think they looked better than Forrest. I thought they looked better than Forrest in the first half. I thought they did in that period after half time when Jack Clark came on and made a big difference again. And this is something that Bielsa's been talking about a lot recently, but goals from set pieces, that was the problem, wasn't it? 3 goals in 7 minutes, 2 of them coming direct for headers from corners. Soft, easily avoidable, and becoming a little bit of a trend in a defence which, it has to be said, is very, very makeshift at the moment.
Yeah, I think that was probably the most disappointing thing, because with 10 men, you could kind of forgive Leeds getting picked off sort of on the break or with a good move with the extra man. But when it's organisation at set pieces, when you're down to 10 men, it's an absolute must, isn't it, to be well organised, to go meet the ball. And it was just disappointing the way they conceded 2 goals. Obviously, once Forrest levelled it up again, you were fearing the worst, and once they got another, you were thinking, well, that's the game there. And maybe a little bit of blame for Peacock Farrell on, was it Daryl Murphy's, when he came sort of half off the line, half back, sort of in that sort of vague area of not sure whether to come, not sure whether to stay. So I think just it was more disappointing from the fact that when you've got 10 men, just organisation is absolutely key. And I understand where Bielsa's coming from, saying he's missing his best headers of the ball, but organisation is something that can be put right on the training ground. So
he's not infallible though, Bielsa, is he? And there was an argument on that afternoon at 2-1 up for him to introduce someone like Halmy to provide a bit more height amongst his defence. And his argument afterwards was that, or his explanation afterwards was that he didn't feel that he could sacrifice anybody like Roof or Clark or Alioski, any of the players who were really influencing the way that Leeds were playing when they were on the ball, the attacking threat that they were carrying. But it did feel like a game where other coaches, other managers, and I know this is the trade-off you get with Bielsa if you employ him, but might have taken a more cautious approach with 10 men at 2-1 and might have tried to have shored up the team in a way that would have made them less susceptible to corners. Because there were definite questions over Peacock Farrell's positioning for the third goal, but it was a clean header for Daryl Murphy. Janssen got his positioning slightly wrong with him, and Murphy was able to just ping that into the corner. And he's going to score from that sort of position. Everybody knows that. He's been doing it for years. And I guess tactically there was just a question about whether Bielsa could have done things differently.
Yeah, and I think he said that afterwards, didn't he? He was like, I'm just explaining why I made this decision. It doesn't necessarily make it the right decision. But I think we know from him being here half a season now that he always sticks to his guns and he wants his team to go and attack. And to be honest, in a slight defence of him as well, in that Leeds were pretty much on top until they conceded that leveller, and then after that there was a crazy, what was it, 7 minutes or so. And to be honest, I think he was going to bring Shackleton on, wasn't he, at one point, and then he just sat that off after they went 4-2 down. But I think it was just all a bit frantic, and I think he just kind of thought that Leeds were well on top, and by the time that he'd suddenly sort of gathered his thoughts again, they were suddenly 4-2 down. So I don't know whether he just maybe thought that Leeds might see the game out, but I can understand. I mean, we even said in the press box, didn't we, that, I mean, I think I actually turned to you and said he should put Halm on, and you just went, not a chance. And that's just because we know that he sticks to his guns, and that's just the way he is, and as it proved. And to be honest, when we came here, we kind of knew that he was this kind of manager that was going to stick to his guns, stick to his play, and he admitted in one of his early press conferences that there might be times where it costs him, and that was definitely one of the games. And Leeds haven't had many of those this season, maybe the West Brom one where they just didn't score goals, but I think that's one of those that you just file into that and accept that a manager like Bielsa is going to spew up some of those games on occasion.
Yeah, it's hard not to admire, and like you say, a little bit like his management of the squad, the size of squad he likes, his kind of resistance to what look like fairly obvious additions to it, it all comes as part of the package, and I guess you have to go with that when you bring him in. And there isn't much arguing with it when the top of the table with 51 points after 26 games. I guess the slight difference with the West Brom game was that there was no obvious tactical change to be made there. It simply came down to the number of times that Leeds were losing possession over the halfway line and leaving themselves wide open. I know there were arguments on the night about whether Shackleton should have played it right back instead of Dallas, and there were little tweaks he could have made. I think Forrest is probably the first time, certainly I can think of clearly, where there did seem to be a decision to be made in the second half which might have changed the structure of the team. But having said that, he plays his way. Everybody always talks about wanting a certain style of football, wanting entertaining and attacking football. As we said, you could see how it was that Forrest and Villa served up a 5-5 draw after that game. I mean, that game itself seemed to be going on 5-5 in the second half. But we did, I think we all said when it went 2-2, we all said they're going to lose this now. And you just sensed that the momentum had swung, and that there were too many gaps too many weaknesses at the back for them to get out of there with anything.
And to be fair, even after Clark equalised, there was, I think it was even from when they went ahead, or was it when they went ahead? I can't remember anyway. But I think there was a couple of last ditch challenges just after Leeds equalised, and that you could kind of see Forrest getting through there already. So it wasn't like it wasn't happening before Leeds went ahead. They just were clinical in front of goal. So I think, like we say, you just have to kind of file that into a draw with. You just accept those kind of results with the Bielsa style of play. And these last couple of results, these defeats in particular, haven't quite felt like the West Brom defeat. You know, it wasn't quite, they're not been quite damaging. Leeds have still played the way that they have. They've still created chances. It's not like there's a lack of sort of progression there. They're always creating chances. So
you can't class this as a wobble yet,
no,
can
not
you?
At all,
and I know people will factor in the QPR, the FA Cup defeat at QPR as three defeats on the bounce. I think you have to separate that game from the two league matches that they've lost. But it would feel like a wobble had you had the feeling that, obviously, like I said, in my view, I thought Hull got the tactics absolutely spot on, but equally rode the fine margins in that game and got away with the efforts on the goal line that they managed to clear. Instances where Leeds might have got something out of that game. And you can understand Bielsa's rationale for saying, look, I don't even think we deserved something from the game. I think we deserved to win both of them, which was his argument. And I don't, in all honesty, disagree with that. I don't think they played particularly well against Hull, but probably did play well enough to win that. And against Forest, it was just crucial moments that went against them. The Robinson red card that wasn't, the Phillips red card that was, the bad mistake from Forshaw, which a goal is a goal, but that is something that you cannot plan for and comes down to just a complete mind block at the time. It's quite interesting, really, because set pieces were a big problem in Gary Monk's first month as manager two seasons ago, and Nottingham Forest was where that really started to resonate. They conceded two goals from corners, lost 3-1. Monk spoke at length about it afterwards, about the way in which they were conceding cheaply and in those circumstances. And they had just signed Janssen at the time. He'd come in on loan from Torino. And over the course of the next international break, Pep Clatet and in particular worked very hard on a new defensive system where they used Janssen and Chris Wood as free men to attack the ball whenever free kicks or corners came into the box. The idea was that everybody else would mark men, but Wood and Janssen would simply mark space and would look to meet the ball whenever it dropped. And their records at set pieces went from appalling in the first month to one of the best in the division over the course of the championship season. At the moment, Leeds are on 28 concessions in the division, in the championship, at 10 of those from set pieces, another 3 from penalties, which, you know, count as set pieces but don't really count as set piece concessions in the same sense. It's not far off a third of the goals, really, so I guess there is a bit of an issue there. And I think it's been more apparent as well, hasn't it, minus Liam Cooper recently, minus 2 recognised centre-backs, which I still don't feel Calvin Phillips is. He's done well there, he's done fine, but I can't help thinking that it would help Leeds in general for him to shift back into the holding midfield role that he occupied so well in the first 3 months of the season, and to have another centre-back in alongside Janssen.
Yeah, definitely. Leeds have definitely missed him sort of sat in that front of that back forward. It missed his range of passing and just the way he breaks up attacks from opposition. But just going back to the set-piece thing, you'd think that someone like Bielsa would have sort of the finer details of organisation of set pieces in particular.
Would seem like drilled in to him,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
So it's not maybe not concerning, but an interesting trait of one of his teams that they are sort of conceding a third of their goals as the season so far through set pieces. And obviously it's been evident in the last few weeks, but you'd have thought that they've hopefully will have been working on this in the last few weeks now. So it can't just be, I don't buy into the fact that it's just because he's missing his best headers of the ball. For me, set pieces can be drilled and organised on the training pitch, so I just think there's maybe a bit more improvement to happen there. And even if it's just freeing up someone to go and attack the ball, or I understand the sort of makeshift defence of who someone might not know what they're doing, but I don't quite buy in that someone doesn't know what they're doing under Bielsa because of his finer details.
Does natural organisation, though, not come with players who understand naturally those sort of situations? Players like Cooper and Janssen, who are trained as centre-backs, who know how to read balls coming into the box, does that not generally feed into players around them? I agree with what you say. You can't help feeling that there's got to be an organisational part to this as well as just personnel. But some of the defensive lines that Bielsa has been fielding recently, in particular at QPR on Sunday, there's so little height in them that you almost feel that even if you were organised and positioned well, you're at risk of being beaten by teams or being dominated by teams who simply benefit from the addition of extra height in the team.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being ultra critical, and it's one of the only areas that you can probably actually look at and say that's an issue at the moment. So maybe that's why. But I just think, for me, you should be able to defend set pieces no matter what, really. But I suppose headers of the ball like Cooper and Berardi and people like that, yeah, they have been missed, but ultimately it comes down to organisation. Maybe it's just me being super critical.
Well, no, I mean, to be fair, I mean, Bielsa's made a big play of this himself, hasn't he? It's him who's spoken about this very openly. Mm. And he seems to have two main concerns at the moment: the concessions from set pieces, which obviously we've blethered on about now, but also the number of chances that Leeds are creating, the ratio of that to the number of goals they're scoring. He doesn't think they're taking enough. He doesn't think that they're as clinical as other teams in the division. And if you look at the stats, they're top for shots on goal per game at just under 16, which is a very, very high tally, and second to Norwich for shots on target per game. So extremely aggressive attacking side who do look for goals. But I think what Bielsa feels at the moment is that because they're not taking enough of those chances, they're not making it easy for themselves. They're not giving themselves straightforward, comfortable wins, and they're putting a lot of pressure on the defence to defend well and to make sure that other teams aren't able to nick something from games. And when you start going through the results, even that long run of 7 straight victories, there was only one in it, the game at home to Bristol City, that was won by 2 goals or more, and that required an 86th minute goal from Pablo Hernandez, and all the others have been shaded. You know, the 95th minute goals at Villa, deserved win, I thought. 95th minute goal against Blackburn, again, I thought Leeds played well enough to win that, and probably played well enough to win every game right the way through that run, but it was always just enough. It was always just enough to get by. And I think he is starting to feel that it would be helpful if they could be more dominant and in their position, if they could start to turn the screw a bit more by not making every game into, you know, into a gunfight or into, you know, a very, very close finish.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about the last time Leeds were two up at half time, and you sort of sat thinking this is all wrapped up here. Leeds are cruising, and just doesn't seem to be the case in the last few months. But I think also sort of another factor is like people like Matthias Klieg and maybe even Alioski to an extent. The goals have sort of dried up from behind Roof, which is also, I mean, if you take out Pablo Hernandez's assists and goals there as well. You're sort of struggling to look round for anyone who's sort of getting near the double figures mark other than KMR Roof, and I think that's another issue, and that sort of starts coming back to maybe having someone like Patrick Bamford who's been injured on the sidelines, someone like Izzy Brown who's maybe more creative that we've still not seen yet. So I think that's maybe something that hopefully they'll be looking to bring in. Obviously looking for a winger this month, and maybe that's an area that he'll be hoping to improve. But I just think it just comes down to the fact that goals from Cleek and people like that have just started to dry up in the last few months. I think, what was he, on five after six or seven games, wasn't he, or something like that? And
we've joked, haven't we, that they've started drying up since the crowd started singing about him. And
I remember saying that, me and you were saying, as soon as that song came out, he's never going to score for Leeds again, and it's actually happening.
It seems to be, yeah, little by little, seeping in a definite way. But there wasn't any doubt, I don't think, against Hull, that he was lacking confidence when the ball was falling to him in shooting in positions where he was scoring and was taking the ball on August, September, October time. There's one instance in particular against Hull, right in injury time, where he had a good 5 yards of space around him, was at the edge of the box, and he did seem to be in two minds about whether or not to just leather the ball. And you do wonder whether it is just starting to get into his head now that he hasn't scored for a little while, he hasn't had assists for a little while. And it would only be natural, I guess, particularly because everybody now has this expectation on him. But he's had a definite dip, I think. Without dipping to the point where you'd want him out of the team, I still think he's contributing. I still think physically he's a really useful presence in there. But just not quite the same influence that he was before. And I think, if you go back to August, there were so many players, August, September, so many players who were sharing the weight. There was Hernandez, there was Saiz, who had a good month and is now gone. There was Klieg as well. Alioski was decent in that first month. It does feel as if, I don't know, perhaps the pace of the season is just starting to catch up slightly, which wouldn't be a surprise. It's probably having that effect at every club throughout the division. And we'll come on to transfers later in the podcast, but that, I think, is one argument for why a little bit of an injection of fresh blood, fresh legs, fresh energy would be no bad thing at all in this window.
Yeah, I think Bielsa even said himself, didn't he? Klieg's been involved in near enough every game he's been available for, whether it be club or country this season. So that's going to have a little bit of an effect, isn't it? But not in terms of his, not massively in terms of his actual play, but in terms of his actual contribution in terms of goals and assists, it seems to have just dropped off. And I think it was another moment in that whole game where I think he broke through onto his left foot, and he had a chance to sort of bend it into the bottom corner, and he scuffed it, and he did that a few games ago as well. And you were just thinking, Villa was
the real,
yeah, that
real
one where it opened up and he sort of played it, he basically backpassed it, didn't he? And you were just thinking, if one of those goes into the bottom corner, his confidence is going to skyrocket, isn't it? But maybe it is just starting to play a little bit, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like a massive drop off in form. I think it's just maybe in the last few games he's started getting a bit more tired, a bit more over reliance on him from earlier in the season. And if Pablo hadn't popped up in this last few games, we might be in a bit of trouble. But I think he just needs a goal, doesn't he?
As Pablo always does, really. No Hernandez down at QPR on Sunday. I wouldn't say no anybody, but it wasn't far off being devoid of recognisable faces. Jurgen Klopp was getting questioned last night about whether he was disrespectful of the FA Cup away at Wolves by fielding what you'd call a weakened team, certainly well below their strongest lineup. It strikes me as the most tedious discussion of the season every year, on the basis that you think clubs can really pay as much attention to individual competitions as they like and bear the consequences. But if he was disrespectful, then what about Bielsa? Because it was a team full of 23s down at QPR. It was a bench full of 23s down at QPR. It was a team that was quite heavily loaded with them. A lot of key faces missing: Kemar Roof, Fernandez, Janssen, players who Bielsa didn't even enlist for the 18 in case, as they did in the end, needed a late goal. So, to a large degree, a team that was never too likely to win down there, but actually a team who played pretty well, I thought, and gave a much stronger QPR lineup a good game.
Yeah, it goes back to his press conference, doesn't it, where he sat for 45 minutes and explained exactly why he'd named that team, and he was naming that team and taking the players down, because essentially, in a lot of cases, he just thought they needed rest. And yeah. I think he's rightly so. They've had the problem with the FA Cup is that the FA don't respect it themselves. So how they expect managers to respect the competition when you spread it out over 4 or 5 days for various different TV deals, not even in this country, that diminishes the competition itself. So I think putting it as well the first week in January, I know it's always been that, but straight after a busy festive period where games have been coming thick and fast is another big reason. Someone like Klopp, who plays the style he does, it's no surprise that they're going to make use of their squads. And to be honest, like you say, Liverpool have got pressing things, as have Leeds this year. So it's like polar opposites. What's the word? I don't know what the word is.
But busy Christmas it was, though. I mean, we all said, didn't we, by the end of the Forest game, it felt as if, adding the Warrington fight on as well, it was the Warrington fight on the 22nd, it was Villa on the 23rd, it was Blackburn on the 26th, Hull on the 30th, Forest on the 1st, and then you're down to QPR. And I agree with you, the argument about respecting the FA Cup doesn't really hold when the moving of the game to 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon is for the benefit of viewers in Canada and America, and even beyond there, Rwanda and Sierra Leone. And no offence to anybody who is watching over there, but that does look like money grabbing on the part of the FA.
Yeah, what is it? $820 million, I think they're making of this deal.
Yeah, and obviously that feeds into the club's accounts, because the clubs get money for the various rounds that they go through. But it never seems to feed into ticket prices for the supporters who go. It never tends to feed into travel prices either. It doesn't account for the fact that getting to London by train on a Sunday can be a nightmare, and I think was difficult for certainly some of the travelling support who were down there at the weekend.
But I think even if there was more transparency about how this money was being spent, there might be a bit more accepting of it. You know, like if the FA were saying, right, well, we're taking this money, it's astronomical, and we're going to put X amount into helping supporters get there, X amount into grassroots football, improving the state of Sunday league pitches elsewhere and whatever else. But there's no transparency. They didn't even announce the figures for the deal when they initially sort of sorted all this out. So I don't know. When people start chucking the respect of the FA Cup at managers, it just doesn't really sit, does it? Because of the treatment of the competition on a whole and in general. So yeah, it's rubbish.
Football moves on as well, and just because it was the biggest trophy going when we were all young doesn't mean it is now.
Your Champions League is now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so, Premier League, it's
European Cup,
and you cannot discount the financial implications. The only thing I would say is that over the years, it has never really felt like it has helped Leeds to be eliminated early. There is always that argument that, well, this is a good thing because it cuts down on fixture congestion later in the season. But neither Bielsa nor Adam Forshaw, both of them spoke after the game on Sunday, wanted to put it in those terms. And if I think back, it was not a good thing for Christensen to lose at Newport in the way that they did with the team that they did. It was not a good thing for Gary Monk to lose at Sutton United in the way that they did with the team that he did. And I think in a lot of respects he pushed it an awful lot further than Christensen by using Billy Whitehouse and Paul Mackay, who quite honestly were nowhere near the first team before that game and nowhere near the first team after it either. It was a definite play on his part to say, I don't have enough players and I need signings right at the end of the window. But on either occasion did you think that, yeah, that was extremely beneficial to be out of the cup? I thought this was slightly different this time round, in that it was a second string from Bielsa, but you didn't feel like it was a second string loaded with players who he doesn't like or doesn't want or was, you know, using for the benefit of getting this fixture out the way. I think he genuinely felt that they would go there and give QPR a game. I think he genuinely felt that they could win it. And actually, they deserved to lose in the end. I thought QPR's front line were too much, particularly in the second half. But it wasn't a whitewashing, it wasn't an embarrassment. And I guess it came without the threat of the lower league humiliation as well, which was obviously very, very real at Newport and even more real again at Sutton United on that horrendous artificial pitch.
Yeah, I think also it was a good reward for a lot of players that have played really well for the development squad this year, and also they've all stepped up for BL. Well, most of them have stepped up due to injuries, but I think it's just it's come across more of a reward for a lot of hard work for the youngsters rather than sort of a handout, if you see what I mean. You're right there with Monk and Christensen, it was very much an embarrassing way to crash out. The Saiz thing was another factor at Newport, where that damaged Leeds Championship campaign sort of going into the new year and beyond. But I don't think this one you can particularly throw that at Bielsa. I think it was definitely, it felt like it was a good showing from the under-23s, and I think that's about as positive as you can be about it. And without saying it was good to lose, it was a good showing, and it was about as positive as it can get in a defeat, and obviously to avoid a trip to Portsmouth as well.
Well, yeah, every cloud, much as we'd have been thrilled to be on the road down there, and that would absolutely have been a Sunday television game, if not Friday night or Monday evening or something like that. So I don't think anybody will be too disappointed about going to Rotherham on that weekend rather than the South Coast. I agree, really. I think it is an occasion where you can call it good experience for the players who played. I think it might be fair to say that Bielsa perhaps pushed it a little far with the likes of Tomeniskov and Clark O'Dour, who haven't been seen before and potentially not quite ready for that sort of level. I thought it pushed Leif Davis a long way as well, actually, in the second half as well. He wasn't, obviously it was his foul for the penalty, but I think potentially not quite at the point where he needs to be in that sort of game regularly. But I don't think on this occasion it'll have done anybody any harm particularly. So one that we can move on from, I think, without too many recriminations. Although the question we were saying, or the subject we were talking about earlier, about whether this is a wobble or not, it's going to depend on the derby result, isn't it, this weekend? It's going to depend on what happens on Friday night, on whether Leeds reassert themselves, get another win on the board, strengthen their position at the top of the table on the basis that Norwich and West Brom are meeting the following afternoon at the Hawthorns. This is the biggest game of the season, I think, by a country mile. It sounds fairly obvious, given that we are now into January and we're kicking on into the second half. But I think with Derby in sixth, 8 points back, with West Brom and Norwich playing the following day, with Leeds just on a run of three straight losses, this is crucial.
It's a big one, isn't it? Obviously, because of the Friday night aspect, they're on Sky again, but they're on Sky against a promotion rival, and it's a real chance to send a message to the rest of the division to say, look, we're here, we're not going away. Forget a performance and 3 points and beat and like Derby County, Frank Lampard's Derby County, we should get in there.
It has to be said, far be it from me to defend the great man, but he's done.
But you are.
He's as a rookie manager.
He's done well.
He's done extremely well this season.
You have to hold your hands up.
The lasting image I felt of the game down at Pride Park when Leeds won 4-1 in August, his first home game as manager, was at 4-1 down, of him stood in the technical area on his own with his hands in his pockets looking totally dejected and realising that he was getting absolutely schooled by a head coach who had 30 years more experience and had got Leeds playing in a way that I'm pretty sure Lampard would have loved Derby to have been playing as well. And I came away from that game thinking, I wonder how he's going to cope with this, and I wonder whether in three months' time, 4 months' time, he'll be looking at management and thinking, this isn't anywhere near as much fun as I thought it was going to be, and actually it's an incredible amount of stress. But the sixth in the table, I've been pretty impressed actually with the way that they've settled down since then, had some very good results. I cannot see this being another 4-1 game on Friday.
No, I think it'll be tight. But yeah, I think it'll be two teams that are going to go and try and play football. I don't think there's going to be any Hull or Birmingham or Nottingham Forest approach from Derby. I think they'll come and I think they'll be looking at it as well. It's that as much as it's a chance for Leeds to send out a statement, it's equally as much a chance for Derby to send out a statement saying, look, we're still looking at the top two as well. Especially going into the new year, it could give either side a real push. And I think with Leeds having lost the last three, all right, everyone's sort of still saying that it's not a wobble, but I think if they come away with a bad result on Friday night, I think they'll be full meltdown mode, won't they? So
Twitter, prepare we'll yourself. See. Yes.
But I honestly think that with the little break, and if Leeds can go out and reassert this style of football, I think they can go and get a positive result.
The chance to refresh for Roof, Hernandez, Janssen, and others has got to make a difference. Calvin Phillips suspended for this game is is a definite setback. And I think if, particularly with the possibility that Liam Cooper might play on Friday, I know you were at the 23s game at Hull last night. He plays 65 minutes. As we said, has recovered unbelievably quickly from a knee operation. I mean, that's been about 4 weeks.
Well, I was looking, and he was actually, so when Leeds put that tweet out, it was the 19th of December, which was what, less than 3 weeks after his operation. And then he's been back in the 23s, what, less, just over, a little over 5 weeks, I think, yeah, since his actual injury. So it is remarkable, and I think we said it before, Rob Price is the Leeds United Pope. He must have some weird thing going on, but I genuinely think there's a good chance of him playing.
Mind you say that, but the rate at which the injuries keep coming make you think that he must just spend all day, all night on his phone. These physios these days are just permanently accessible for 24 hours, and you kind of wonder when he last had a holiday.
Well, yeah, I mean,
1997
he was,
or something like he's that. He's basically been
every 23s game as well with me, watching whoever's been coming back that week, and he was there again last night with Bielsa. So I think it seemed that he was very happy. He was supposed to play 60 minutes. He played 65, came off, obviously had an ice pack, which caused a few alarms for a few people. But I think it was all just precautionary stuff and expected. And I think there's a genuine chance he could be in with a shout on Friday night.
He's got to play, isn't he?
I think as long as there's been no sort of recurring thing with his knee, I think he's going to have to 100% start.
With Forshaw in front of him.
Absolutely.
It's slightly unfortunate, and again, not really a criticism of Forshaw this. I think he's done okay. I think he's done pretty well. Terrible afternoon. Game from hell, really, at Forest for him. But this would have been an opportunity to have got Phillips back into the defensive role, who just is, by a mile, the most tailored player for that position.
Isn't this just the way Leeds United season's gone, though?
Absolutely. One in, one out.
Someone gets injured and goes, and then for some reason you're either sending off, and just as you get your centre-half back, which means Phillips can go back into midfield, and now he's banned for 3 games.
Yeah, Rob Price must be sat in the stands going, well, at least it's a red card rather than a twisted ankle. Nothing to do with me. Wasn't the mistake you were talking there, you know, Derby will come to play, which I think they will. Leeds always do. Wasn't that the mistake that Lampard made at Pride Park? You were there, I think. I think you were. Can't remember. Is that
no,
one
I watched
ago?
That one on telly.
Did you?
Yeah. I don't know why. Waste. I can't remember why.
Yeah.
Maybe I just chose to have the afternoon off.
Yeah. One
like
game into the season.
Like I did with Villa.
Yeah, fair enough.
I can't remember.
But it wasn't the mistake he made trying to fight fire with fire against Leeds and getting caught constantly on the counter. And I accept that Leeds haven't played as well as they did in August at any stage. That was by a mile the best stretch of performances. But that was what did for them down there, was the fact that they tried to take Leeds on, and Leeds were considerably better than them on the afternoon.
Saez was absolutely unplayable. Horrible word,
unplayable. No, but I think it did apply that day in the first half. He was
sensational that day, and I think, he was sort of pulling the strings.
Our old friend Amitai Winehouse, who's now down at the Daily Mail, he tweeted saying, a friend of mine has just been in touch with his halftime review, which basically said, Samuel Saez has amazing thighs. And I thought, pretty much sums up the first half of that. Yeah, that's pretty good. Is it a slightly off the wall report as opposed to Mateusz Klich scored after 10 minutes?
It's definitely adding a bit of colour.
Yeah.
Which we all want in our match reports rather than just the facts.
I don't think you could dispute it either. No.
But going back to that, yeah, I think he'll be a little more cautious, but yeah. I still think he'll want to try and attack Leeds, and he's got players there that can hurt Leeds, don't get us wrong, like Harry Wilson, Tom Lawrence. And people like that can certainly hit Leeds on the break, and I think it's got all the makings to be a fantastic game. I think that Derby have come a long way since that result as well. They've had a few big results themselves. The late win at Norwich, which is just crazy. That the win going to West Brom and
smash
beating them 4-1 was a big statement as well. So I think there are a very different team and a long way from that smashing from Leeds, because that was a point where Derby's season could have, I mean, it was early, but it's like you said there, it was kind of a defining moment for Lampard, whether it was going to sort of, he's just going to sink or swim, and he seems to be doing okay. So I think it has the makings of a good game.
Yeah, he was quite prickly at the press conference after that, which again made you wonder how, you know, but literally one home game in, which made you wonder how he was going to cope with it all. But the danger men are fairly obvious, aren't they? Wilson, do not concede free kicks around the box would be the message with him. Lawrence, like you say, load of pace out wide. He trusted in Mason Mount, didn't he, Lampard from Chelsea, which I think has been a pretty astute signing. And Marriott up front is quite an interesting case, because he was linked with Leeds right the way through the summer. Leeds never bid for him. And I remember speaking to somebody at the club who said, it's not that we don't think he's a good player, it's just that we don't think he's any better than Kamal Roof. And we don't think for the money we'd have to pay, £68 million, that we would get any more than we've already got with Roof. And I don't think Bielsa would trade Roof for Marriott. I suspect Lampard is probably quite happy with Marriott over Roof as it stands. I think both coaches would probably have either, but Roof certainly fits well into what Bielsa's doing in a way that I'm not sure Marriott would, and Marriott clearly suits what Lampard's trying to do down at Pride Park as well.
It's funny saying that, because when I remember you saying that on an, I can't remember if it was on an early podcast or just when we were at a game, but you wouldn't have said that about Roof in the summer before this season. But like in hindsight, you can go, well, actually, they were right. You know, the way he's played this year, the way he's scored goals. I mean, that game at Derby, he was absolutely fantastic, wasn't it? That header is probably still one of my favourite goals of the season. Just the way
his second on the day was the best of the two. One of that beautiful Tom. Yeah. I can't remember who it was he sent to the wrong fire, but one of Derby's centre backs, he pretty much just lay on his back and said, "Oh dear,
they're not keen."
But that was a great finish. But I mean, Marriott was similar to Roof, and as much as he'd scored goals in a lower league, a lot of goals in a lower league, but was jumping up a division, and I do think there's quite a substantial difference between the Championship and Leagues 1 and League 2. I think it is a fairly large leap. So, again, like I say, one that Leeds never really got into, and one that they didn't get into specifically because they thought Roof would contribute. And I think as well, they were looking for a higher calibre of striker to go with him along the lines of Abel Hernandez and Vidra and ultimately Bamford, who did come in. Which leads us nicely on to transfers and the transfer window. Which £10 million, £7 million signing is going to arrive in this window? look, we'll start with the outs, because we at least have some outs this week. I'd be very, very surprised this month, having spoken to people at the club, if any of the outs this month are for anybody of any significance. Kamal Roof, Jack Clark, anybody that is key and that is heavily involved. For one reason, in a PR sense, it would look terrible. But on the other hand, I don't think it's something that Bielsa would countenance. I don't think it's something he would accept. And I think it would be very difficult to sell to him the decision to move on any of the key players. So far this week, we've had Louis Coyle gone back to Fleetwood loan until the end of the season. I don't think anybody greatly surprised by that, although there was a question, wasn't there, a couple of weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, when Ayling was out and others, about whether or not actually he might have a role to serve here. But realistically, Dallas is coming back from his fractured foot now. Jamie Shackleton did well at right back at QPR, has done well really any time he's played. I think without making a definite judgment on this, it's very hard to see how it's going to pick up for here for Louis Coyle again at Leeds, despite the fact that I do think he's a good player and I do think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I think he's obviously enjoying playing football every week, and he's obviously got 18 months left on his deal at Leeds, but I think this is probably the end, isn't it now? I think he'll probably move in the summer, I would imagine. And he looks good when you watch him in the FA Cup or League One. I think managers as well have said it, even Barton and Sheridan, his last few managers have all said that he's an absolute consummate professional. What he lacks in talent, he makes up in work ethic. So that's why we were kind of leaning towards possibly thinking that he might come back, because he's maybe someone that Bielsa can work with. But it looks like someone like Jamie Shackleton, etc., has all sort of already overtaken him, and he's someone that Bielsa knows already, so it looks like it's probably the beginning of the end.
I think so. The good thing about Coyle, his personality and attitude, is that if he does go, he'll be philosophical about it and he'll just crack on elsewhere, and he will make somebody a very, very good right back in the long term. Conor Shaughnessy, and the biggest move he's ever going to have in his career has gone to Heart of Midlothian.
Tynecastle.
Heart of Midlothian.
Hearts, glorious hearts.
Beautiful city, nice new main stand. Need a centre-back after Jimmy Dunn going back to Burnley. Need a hell of a lot else, to be perfectly honest. But quite a strange one with Shaughnessy, because he was one of the players who Bielsa spoke about a lot at the start of the season as somebody you'd fall back on. When we were all asking Bielsa, why don't you sign another centre-back, Shaughnessy was always mentioned as a player who he would rely on or would depend on if he became short of players, which ultimately he has done. But he's had injuries. He was very poor in the League Cup game against Preston in August, gave away a penalty in the first minute, and is clearly behind Apple Helm in the order now. And I mean, this, it seems like a good idea to move him out. I don't I've never been convinced by him, to be honest. It hasn't looked to me like he was up to first team level in the Championship at this stage. And could be a good move for him.
Yeah, I think obviously he's been fairly unlucky with injuries at crucial times. He got injured last January, didn't he? Just before Christian got sacked, and then he spent a lot of this season already after that League Cup horror show on the sidelines, and he's just not had that run of games in the development team either. So I think getting some consistent minutes at his age is now got to be the thing for him, whether it's here or elsewhere. And obviously he's decided to go up to Hearts, and good luck to him. He just needs to start finding an identity of his game, doesn't he? Because I think that's a big thing. You're not really sure, like, initially what he was, whether he was a midfielder or a centre-half. I think he's definitely centre-back, but I think he just needs game time. And to get some competitive minutes away from the 23s is probably the best for him at, what is it, 22 now? So I think that's, you know, Hearts can only benefit, Phil.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm still to be convinced that he is a centre-back. I mean, he grew up as a midfielder at Reading, and I know from speaking to people at Reading when he joined the 21s, as it was at Leeds, and he was really signed to bulk up the numbers more than anything. They all said, you know, really good professional, really committed lad, but they had doubts about whether he was going to make it at a high level professionally, and I think that he's probably still at that stage of figuring that out. And if you had any doubt that Bielsa was going to rely on his existing defensive options, I think the fact that Paddy O'Connor has come back from Blackpool and is now heading out to Bradford on loan for the rest of the season pretty much tells us that Bielsa is going to make do with what he's got. I know Leeds tried to push centre-backs his way in the summer. He said, no, I don't think they're even going to bother in this month because they know that he's not interested. He's counting purely on Liam Cooper and Berardi coming back from injury and filling in, which makes sense to a degree. But also, when you look at the rate at which the injuries have continued to flow at Leeds, it's hard not to feel that by the time those two come back, there's going to be issues with other players elsewhere in his defence, which might cause a problem. But like we said, you know, with the tactics against Forrest and everything else, this is what you buy into when you appoint him. And actually, he's done a fantastic job of, I think, quite honestly, punching above the weight of this squad. I really do. Even though they're top of the league and they've been this consistent right the way through, you can't forget that this squad kind of trundled into 13th last season. Not quite dropped off a cliff after Christmas, but weren't able to keep themselves in the running at all. And the way he's managed gaps in the squad, the way he's coped without certain players that are missing, I think is a massive credit to him. Not that he really needs credit for anything after a career like he's had, but I do question regularly how many other head coaches would A, have managed to cope in these circumstances, and B, would have tolerated these circumstances with the number of players that he's got and the gaps in the team. But then the size of the squad was ultimately of his choosing.
Yeah, and the just the belief that he's instilled in the players as well, you can see on the pitch, can't you? So I guess that, you know, when he says, I've got enough defenders, it gives that boost to those that are already here, that they're basically waiting on them to come back in and step straight back into Championship action. So, yeah, Paddy O'Connor's obviously a bit of a weird one because he's playing a lot of cup games for Blackpool, but not a lot of actual league action. So I think that's probably why he's gone to Bradford. But obviously another one, Liam Kitchen as well, who's staying out at Harrogate, who, you know, I think Bielsa went to watch as well earlier this season. So I think he's very, very aware of all these players, but I think ultimately he just wants them to get game time as well, doesn't he?
In terms of incomings, and I think this is where, you know, this is where the attention lies now, as interested as we are in where Shaughnessy's going, I suspect it will be a maximum of three this month. It'll be a goalkeeper, it'll be a winger, and it'll possibly be a number 10 on top of that to compensate for Samuel Saiz. There isn't much sign of movement at the moment, but I do get the impression that the club realise that they need to do business in those areas if they can, at the same time while not having the biggest budget in the league by any stretch. We've said regularly on this podcast that there is not a huge amount of cash at Leeds. They're not a cash-rich club. And if you go back through any of Radrizzani's interviews that we've done over the years, he says constantly that it is a loss-making club, that he doesn't want to lose huge amounts of his own money in running Leeds. And he says quite openly that it's not a club he could afford to run indefinitely in the Championship, that there would be a limited time frame for him will Leeds to stick around in this division. And I honestly wonder what he would do if he was looking at a third season in the Championship, whether he'd have the appetite for that or whether at the end of this season, if Leeds don't go up, he'd be looking to pass it on to somebody else. Goalkeeper-wise, it isn't a secret that the first choice is Carl Darlow up at Newcastle. They've already approached Newcastle about that. They've looked into that closely. I think they're fairly confident that Darlow would like to come, but he's looking like if Newcastle choose to sell at all, like, he'll go for about £4 million. And again, I think Leeds would prefer a loan in that position. I think they'd certainly prefer to loan Darlow than pay that amount of cash out for him. And at the moment, I'm not getting the sense that one's gonna happen. Linked today with Michael Vorm down at Spurs, formerly of Swansea. Dutch keeper, well into his career now, about 35. Again, available, but from what I can gather, I've had a phone about this morning, I think he's been offered by Spurs as opposed to Leeds approaching Spurs for him, and it does sound like they're looking at other alternatives. But I think a, you know, an experienced keeper is going to be on the way. I'd be very surprised if that didn't happen. And I don't know, we've defended Peacock Farrell quite a lot in previous podcasts, but I have felt over Christmas that the argument for replacing him has become stronger and stronger. I think issues of confidence and positioning, his speed of reaction in certain situations, it's starting to look like a change would help Leeds. And I can't help thinking, and again, we've touched on this, that there has been an awful lot thrown at him this season. Number one at Leeds, number one at Northern Ireland, with Northern Ireland only 22, his first full season. It's a hell of a lot of very, very soon.
Yeah, I think he just comes back to it. He might just need a little bit of a break away from the limelight, and it's not a hit on him. I think he's done extremely well in difficult circumstances, but I just think maybe it's the problem is that without Jamal Blackman there's no alternative. So he's had to have played these sort of last 10 games or so since that injury, and I just think Leeds do need to get a bit more experience in that position, and not only for the benefit of the team, but for the benefit of Peacock Farrell's long-term career as well, because having his soul-destroying next few months might be, you know, something that could make or break him. And I mean, we were looking a year ago, weren't we, to where he was then to where he is now is an absolute world away. And he still has things to learn at the age of 22 in a position that you are under so much pressure in, that every mistake leads to a goal. And at the right end of a championship battle, the pressure can get quite telling at times, so I think it's definitely an area Leeds need, even just for competition, and experience is probably one of those. I think the going back to the Darlow one, the £4 million price tag is probably off-putting for any Leeds fan, given that, you know, if the best does happen this season, is Darlow gonna be a Premier League goalkeeper as well? That's a, you know, and we go back to the transfer window in general, this is probably the best chance Leeds have had and probably maybe will have in the next few years to get up to the Premier League. And I'm sure a lot of Leeds fans will be sat going, well, what's 10 million over three players to when that's going to turn into 150 million if you go up to the Premier League? But
then if you go up, what's £4 million on Calvert-Lewin?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So that's the thing that they have to weigh up, isn't it, this window, is whether they take sort of, it's that brinksmanship thing of trying to etch the best out of this squad that Bielsa's got, but all while maybe taking a little bit of a risk with finances to push it. And obviously Leeds are a club that in the past don't need telling twice about risking with finances, so we'll see.
Also don't need telling twice about not doing enough in January, though. Is it really a fine balance? And yet at the same time, you've got a head coach who more often than not gives you the impression of not being remotely bothered about the transfer window. And he did say last week, didn't he?
Yeah, there's a gap
for a goalkeeper. There's a gap for a winger if Pablo Hernandez is playing centrally, but by the same token, a gap for a number 10 if Hernandez is playing out wide, where he's been very effective on the right. So you did kind of get the sense from Bielsa that, yeah, actually, he was at the point of wanting players in and needing players in. But you know, and the club admit this themselves, that it's going to be difficult to meet the standard of player that he wants combined with the fitness of player he wants. Because if we go back to Jamal Blackman, the reason Blackman didn't play at the start of the season was because when he came in, he was not out of shape in the sense of being hideously overweight, but he was nowhere near the condition that Bielsa wanted the players to be in, and therefore he didn't play at all in the league before he broke his leg. And I think at one stage Bielsa said he in the end shed about 18 pounds up to the point where he was about to get a chance after the West Brom game and prior to breaking his leg. So I think that puts the pressure on in the transfer market financially. There'll be limits to what Leeds can do. I think the pool of players who will fit the way Bielsa plays and the levels of fitness that he looks for will be fairly limited as well. But I never, ever accept in January that there's nobody out there who can't help. I think, generally speaking, it does tend to come down to cash, doesn't it?
Yeah, and obviously it was interesting that it was the first time he really sort of came out and said, that he wanted a couple of players. I think he'd sort of been staunch before in saying, well, I'm not really bothered. But I think it's kind of evident over this busy period in Christmas and New Year that Leeds do need a couple, and maybe more so than ever at the goalkeeping position. So we shall see, I guess.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting month. What is it, January the 8th as we speak? So a good 22 days to go, but league season about to get going again and in a big way with Derby. Stoked to come after that, and then obviously Rotherham, but big game against Norwich.
I think the other thing as well is teams around Leeds are probably going to strengthen at least one or two, aren't they? And Villa have obviously had a good boost today with Abraham staying. West Brom are already looking.
Yeah, that's a big bonus for Villa. West it does sound like West Brom might lose Harvey Barnes back to Leicester, though. I think they expect to find out this week.
They were looking at someone in the Premier League as well. I was reading the other day, and I can't remember who it is for the life of me, which is great.
Yeah, thanks for that.
But
yeah.
great contribution. But it just shows, though, that teams around Leeds are certainly looking to bring in that quality to add to their squad, already strong squads, especially West Brom. So if they don't strengthen full short, then you know a lot of fingers will be pointed at this month, won't it? So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, just finally, before we finish, quick sort of injury roundup of where we are for the Derby game.
Would it be quicker not to list who's not injured? Are we still we're at the other end of that now?
I think we are just about at the other end. Obviously, Phillips suspended. One game served already, two more to go, so he misses Derby and he misses Stoke. Liam Cooper potentially back involved after his knee injury.
I think he's got a good chance.
Yeah, I think so. Brady, I gather, is targeting the Norwich game at the start of February, which would be pretty much bang on the timescale that was set for him for what was a pretty nasty hamstring tear. And Barry Douglas, the interesting one, he missed QPR. Bielsa said he was injured last week. It was kind of mixed messages really about him, wasn't he? On the one hand,
no one could understand what he was saying.
Yeah, on the one hand, seemed to be saying that he could be out for a while, but on the other hand, was saying no, it's not a huge problem. So we'll see about that one, and that of course would create problems at left back. Although I thought Tom Pearce was decent when he came on in the second half at QPR. Good to see him back. And
yes, and he obviously got through 90 at Hull as well, so he's sort of getting there.
Having got through what about
20 minutes,
38 at QPR
before getting subbed again.
He don't mess about with his transfers, Bielsa, does he?
Not bothered.
Well, listen, thanks everybody for joining us. We'll be back next week after the Derby game, hopefully with another win in our pockets. Hopefully, I was going to say 5 points clear at the top of the Championship, but I haven't worked out the permutations with Norwich and West Brom playing, so I don't know if that's possible. But certainly with a nice healthy gap heading to the team formerly known as Gary Rowett's Stoke City. But thanks for listening, and we'll be with you soon. Thanks very much. Bye.